Case number 12-1199, National Treasury Employees Union Petitioner versus Federal Labor Relations Authority. Mr. Shaw for the petitioner, Mr. Hennecke for the respondent, Mr. Scherr for the amicus curiae, USA.
Good morning, Mr. Shaw.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Parshaw and I represent the National Treasury Employees Union. I wish to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal. This case is about the union representation rights of IRS employees in their first year of employment during background investigation interviews conducted by OPM investigators. The FLRA, in its decision below, ruled that these employees, among others, lacked the statutory right. But in its ruling, it made 2 separate legal errors that requires reversal here. First, it misapprehended the relevant regulations. It stated that employees in covered positions are subject to OPM suitability determinations. But by regulation, that's simply untrue for those in their first year of employment, the only employees at issue in this appeal. Second, it failed to apply the proper legal standard. But even under the FLRA standard, its legal error as to IRS's regulatory role in making suitability determinations for these employees is material and requires its reversal.
Your theory is that OPM is a representative of the IRS.
Correct, Your Honor, in this situation.
But the statutory structure, if you connect all the dots, it seems President is assigned the primary responsibility. The President, through the regulations long in place, is delegated to OPM. And then OPM, in turn, with this class of employees, may delegate some of that authority to the individual agency. So it's almost as if the IRS represents OPM, not OPM representing the IRS in terms of how this all proceeds. Can you correct me on my structural overview of this?
Your Honor, our position is that through this delegation, OPM has given IRS the job of determining suitability for these employees. And by doing so, it has turned the suitability process into an IRS function. From start to finish, it's IRS that is the key actor. It begins the process by asking its employees, those in its first year, to submit information. It reviews that information, which then triggers the investigation, which, although OPM conducts, it conducts that investigation to facilitate IRS's ultimate determination of suitability.
Let me ask you it this way. Suppose OPM decided to make the suitability determination itself. It could do that, right?
It would have to revoke its delegation of authority
right.
to IRS.
But it has the regulatory authority. It has the ultimate control. In other words, if IRS says, no, we want to do the suitability determination, and OPM says, no, we're going to do it, OPM prevails under the current regulations, correct?
If OPM revokes its delegation of authority, it could then make the suitability determination. But that hasn't happened here. Mm-hmm. And because it hasn't, again, IRS is the key actor in this process, which, viewed in this lens, when OPM investigators perform these investigatory interviews, it is doing so for IRS's benefit. It is doing so for the primary purpose of the suitability determination, which is IRS's to do.
Because OPM has said it's IRS's to do, right?
It gave
it's
IRS
really OPM's to do under the President's delegation,
it
part
is,
of the regulations. Yeah.
Sure, we certainly don't contest that. Suitability generally is under OPM's purview. But here, in this narrow circumstance related to those in their first year of employment, it has given IRS the job of taking over that function. Mm-hmm. And that's what IRS has done.
Can I ask you, this is, I think, needlessly complicated. What is wrong with analyzing this, that you look at who had the authority originally with respect to accepted employees? The IRS did. if it delegates it to the OPM as it does with the investigations, it's still IRS. When you're dealing with the covered employees, including appointees, it is OPM who has the original authority. If it delegates the determination, one part of it, to IRS, it's still OPM. You look at who had it originally.
Your Honor, we think that you can't just look at who had the authority originally. You have to look at how it plays out in actuality.
And what's the authority for that?
I don't know that we have specific authority saying that's how you should view it, but if you look at, for example, the Supreme Court's decision in NASA, which is the only Supreme Court decision interpreting the very words at issue here, it looks at how things play out in actuality. It looks at who has control over the interview, but also who is in charge of the overall process. And here, it's IRS that's involved in the process in its entirety. It has a hand in the entire process from start to finish. And while OPM is conducting the investigatory interview, it does so only to facilitate the ultimate determination, the ultimate outcome, which is the suitability determination.
That's not true, though, because OPM has the authority with respect to all agencies, both to investigate and determine, unless it delegates it. And it did to the IRS, as I understand it, before 2008, and then revoked it, and now IRS has it with respect to determination. But it still belongs to OPM as the original authority.
It is OPM's original authority. And as you mentioned, IRS did have authority for both investigations and determinations before 2008, and then in 2008 it did not renew its request for the authority to do suitability investigations. And what the IRS did in its decision below is it was confused as to what authority IRS retained after 2008 and what exactly it gave up. If you look at its decision below, it seems to indicate that its belief that IRS gave up all of its suitability authority in 2008, but instead that's not what happened. It retained its delegated authority to make suitability determinations.
If it had given up all the authority, would you agree that this was an OPM, that they weren't representatives of the IRS?
But our argument here is certainly that because of these suitability determinations that OPM is acting as IRS.
No, I'm asking about what if OPM didn't make the final suitability determination and for IRS employees. In that instance, is OPM acting as a representative of the IRS or not, in your view?
That's not an argument we're making here. Turning to the legal standard the FLRA used, it used a function and control test, a test that predates the Supreme Court's decision in NASA. And we think that test is inconsistent with NASA and the principles and policies that underlie the NASA decision.
But NASA, of course, I think that's a tough case for both sides here, but NASA, of course, at least the IG's part of NASA.
The IG is under the general supervision of the agency, but the agency has no effect over when the IG initiates investigations and how those investigations are conducted. The IG is completely independent for those purposes, just as OPM is here. So we don't think that independence precludes the finding that here OPM is acting as IRS's representative. And NASA is also instructive because, you know, there again, the IG controlled the very terms of the investigation, the questions that were asked, when the interviews were conducted, just as OPM does here. But again, it doesn't preclude a finding that the investigator, in this case OPM, is the agency's representative.
But that was for the very limited purpose of the Weingarten rights. And the Supreme Court said, we're not opining on the broad, this broad statutory language of whatever it is, 7114A2B. I mean, they were careful to say that in one of the footnotes. I don't have the case in front of me, but I think the amicus is going to argue this exact same argument came up in a case last month, the Border Patrol case. I mean, the limited nature of NASA.
You know, both the FRA and the U.S. as its amicus try to limit NASA strictly to its facts, but you know, NASA, again, is the only Supreme Court case interpreting the very four words at issue here, representative of the agency. And we think that it is instructive here and that it has a broad and really pragmatic holding that looks at whether someone is acting on behalf of and for the benefit of the agency. Take a very common sense approach that is grounded in the policies underlying the statute, which it analyzed in some detail. And we think it can't simply be discarded here because of a factual difference. And indeed, in the FLRA's decisions, in one of its decisions where it applied its function and control test, it also applied the NASA test. In the SSA Boston case that's discussed in both of the parties' briefs, there the authority, even though it applied the function and control test, also discusses NASA in detail, quoting its policy considerations and its holding and applying that test too. And we think that makes sense. We think this is the Supreme Court's test. This is how it's construed these very words, and it can't be disregarded in this case. If there are no further questions, I'll reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
All right. Thank you.
May it please the Court. This case involves OPM investigators conducting and carrying out their legal mission to perform suitability determinations. This is their legal mission derived from Congress and executive order. 5 CFR Chapter 731 describes the functions and the powers and responsibilities of OPM in conducting suitability determinations.
So if it delegates authority,
that's correct.
That's to be ignored?
I'm sorry? Ignored.
Well, I just want to, as I read your brief, it's the theory, not the theory, but the legal proposition that OPM is the gatekeeper for the competitive service.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And therefore, even if it delegates responsibility to an individual agency to make suitability determinations, it is still OPM who is acting. In other words, the sort of functional, structural theory that Judge Kavanaugh's question suggested. And that's your position?
That is. If you look at the regulations under subsection 103, yeah. Absolutely, OPM delegates its authority for different agencies across the federal government to conduct suitability determinations, investigations. However, in that subsection 103, throughout, mm-hmm. it describes all these things, all this delegation being subject to OPM decision on how those investigations are conducted. If OPM disagrees with how that's being conducted, they have exclusive jurisdiction to take that or to revoke that delegation. They can take that back. They have, as they see necessary, the power to control that suitability investigation and determination.
So clarify one thing for me. When the Supreme Court decided NASA, it discusses the FLRA's position, which was arguing against the agency's position.
In NASA?
Yes. And it says the FLRA took the position, one, the agency's position was contrary to outsourcing of these investigations, and two, it was contrary to the congressional policy of allowing these representatives to be present where there was a justifiable concern about the possibility of discipline. So it was within that context that the court was addressing this, what I'll call, statutory scheme. Now, am I incorrect that FLRA basically is no longer concerned about the congressional policy?
No, you're
not. And
that
what I want to understand is that the executive order and the regulations basically ignore that congressional policy that was of concern to the authority, at least at the time of the NASA case.
A key point in the NASA decision, the Supreme Court decision, was that the IG was still a component of the agency.
No, I do understand that argument. All right, I read your brief.
Right.
But can you answer my question?
The policy, the general concerns, the authority can't control what the executive order and Congress delegates to OPM and how that function works. When you have the structure, that chain of command where the IG is within the, and is answerable to the head of the agency, as the Supreme Court found, where that bargaining relationship stems from the head of the agency to the employees, the union's bargaining relationship is with the agency and the agency head. IG flows within that chain of command. Here, OPM doesn't have to answer to.
So I'm taking the question a step further. In other words, OPM has this policy that these representatives are not to be present.
Correct.
But that's not consistent with the position as it was described in the NASA opinion. Is that correct?
I don't think so, Your Honor, because the Weingarten right, again, flows to the, it's through the bargaining relationship.
Right.
And in that situation, the policy, the function, the idea of having these Weingarten rights given to employees and having the union be present, it stems to that bargaining relationship, and the control there is to the head of the agency who runs the different components. Here, that's lacking. So the same concerns, the authority doesn't explicitly describe that in the authority's decision, but I think that might be that where you're going with the question.
The inspector generals, as we know, actually operate with a great deal of independence. They don't really operate as part of the agency.
Correct.
So doesn't that suggest that NASA doesn't necessarily cut in your favor here in as strong a degree as you cite, given that the Supreme Court found that an independent agency conducting an investigation was still subject to this kind of statutory scheme?
Some of this is outside of the authority's control, where it found that the IG is a representative of the agency because it's employed by, and again, works in cooperation, but needs the agency head. That chain of command is there. I hate to be repetitive, but in the OPM situation, Congress, the president, made it very clear that this is OPM's responsibility across the entire federal government. It isn't linked directly to any one agency head that has the bargaining relationship.
Why does, this is probably not an important question, but why does IRS compensate OPM for the investigations?
I'm not sure if that's a, I'm not sure, Your Honor, how that plays out.
Seems odd if it's an OPM mission.
Correct, Your Honor. The finding was, though, that OPM in, well, the union says that it has been delegated the determination function. The findings of fact where the arbitrator found very clearly that since 2008 that delegation had lapsed and it was doing the investigations. My first point is the investigation is what triggers the Weingarten right. And to that extent, that hasn't been delegated back to the authority under even the union's version.
The IRS is still making the final, the agency is still making the final suitability determination, right?
Subject to the delegation rules that we described earlier. Mm-hmm. Looking at the joint appendix, even the witnesses that the union points to recognize that they follow the handbook, the OPM handbook, in making that determination. And when asked very clearly what happens if OPM disagrees, the witness that they rely on says that's up to OPM and they have the final say and they have the authority on that point. And this is Joint Appendix, page 324. What happens if OPM disagrees? OPM has the ultimate authority. And Judge Henderson, I think this gets to a point that you raised earlier. The union's not able to point to any legal authority showing that IRS still has control over this function or the control over the part of the investigation that would, again, trigger that Weingarten right.
Do you agree with me? I found the footnote from NASA's footnote number 8 that the court expressly declined the distinct question of the reach of 7114A2B, that is, whether someone's a representative of the agency or not.
In other situations. The Supreme Court went out of its way to say we're not defining the scope of this. This description of with regard to and on behalf of, that's not a determinative test. The Supreme Court pointed out, again, that the IG is employed by the agency in the NASA case. Here, those reasons for finding that the representative, that the IG was a representative of the agency, aren't here. There are certain situations where outside contractors have been viewed as representatives of the agency, and that's why the authority looked to see if is there another possibility here where this the OPM investigator could be a representative of the agency. And looking at the function and control test, that's what was done. That was the framework in those other cases. Looking at that test, obviously the authority found that the OPM investigators were not representatives of the agency. The function is OPM's. The Chapter 731 describes OPM suitability determinations are the subject of OPM. And this goes to a little bit of the argument that, you know, this will allow the agency to evade its responsibilities of Weingarten, basically subcontract out all these functions. But in the authority's decision, we see there's a limit to that. If the function and the control isn't OPM's, as in the case of the accepted employees, that's where the line's going to be drawn. They don't have function to control the investigation, then they could be representative of the agency. And the agency isn't able to evade that responsibility or those rights under Weingarten.
Okay, I did want to ask you about the finality, just to put it at rest. Is with respect to the accepted employees, is there anything going on at the administrative level?
At the administrative, the authority remanded on the issue of the remedy.
Right.
That issue on the accepted employees isn't here on appeal. It's possible that the parties could have settled what the remedy was. That was part of the authority's order. I'm not aware of further.
You don't know?
Okay. I don't know.
All right. Okay. Mr. Hsu?
Thank you, Your Honor. The answer to the last question is the party settled that matter below on the accepted service.
Okay.
May it please the Court, I'm Howard Scher. I represent the United States as amicus. With me at council table at the extreme left is Robert Girard from OPM. Our two points in this case are as follows. One, IRS acts as OPM's agent in this matter, not the other way around. And so as a matter of control, et cetera, it's OPM that controls the destiny here. Its delegation merely means that IRS is acting as its agent in making suitability determinations. But even so, even if we were to put that aside for just a moment, the investigatory part where the so-called Weingarten rule is supposed to apply belongs to OPM. Nobody even doubts that. And that's the focus of this case, whether in the investigations the Weingarten right should obtain. And it doesn't for the reason I said. In fact, OPM is in control, and it's exercising its own authority throughout. But even if you wanted to segment this, the investigatory part certainly is OPM's authority, and OPM is conducting it. So
I understand your legal argument. What's the practical harm from having the Weingarten representative there for these kinds of inquiries?
Well, in the joint appendix, there is a note from OPM to the union saying that they find third-party participation hinders getting the best answers to the questions in terms of these suitability determinations. And let me say, the suitability determination is distinct from, let's say, an OIG investigation, because the suitability determination seeks to find out the fitness of the employee to be part of the federal workforce, not particularly whether the person ought to be employed or meets other conditions of employment with the particular agency. So there's a vast difference here in that regard, and that takes me over into the NASA point that I'd like to make, which is...
So contrary to the Supreme Court's view on that.
Excuse me, Your Honor?
Well, the Supreme Court had that language in NASA about how the presence of a third party could facilitate the whole process.
Well, and that's why it's important, I think, to note the difference between a suitability determination and what goes on, let's say, in the NASA context. But I think NASA can only be seen through the lens of what the court emphasized in that case, which was not the acting on behalf of or language that the union seeks to focus on, but rather who has the supervising authority, and that's at page 240 of the NASA decision. The supervising authority in that case was the NASA agency head. And the court emphasized that, I think, in a second footnote, in addition to footnote 8, there's footnote 4 in which the NASA court emphasized the concession that was made there that the agency head could tell the OIG to comply with, for example, Equal Employment Opportunity Commission statutes and regulations. And I think what the court was equating there was that the supervisory authority could also tell the NASA OIG to comply with another statutory requirement, namely the one within the federal labor statute, the Weingarten right. But beyond that, the supervising authority here concept does not carry over. Here, the supervising authority of OPM is OPM, and nobody in IRS or Treasury, for that matter, supervises OPM.
The NASA head couldn't tell the NASA OIG how to do the job, what questions to ask, what to look into, to stop looking into things, right?
That's correct. And I think that's why I emphasize to the court that while that independence continues, and I think the argument we had a month ago in the Customs and Border Protection case, we talked about that. Here, I think the difference is what we emphasize about the NASA decision is the supervising authority. Without that, I would submit that the fact that the OIG in the NASA case existed within the NASA structure was the big controlling factor in that case that led the court to give deference to the FLRA in that situation. And I think the fact that OPM does not exist within any agency structure of IRS or Treasury, but is in fact its own supervising authority in this case.
Even though the IG is, I guess I'm repeating myself, just by a thread is the IG in the agency, as a practical matter, as you know.
But I agree with that, Your Honor, in the sense that the investigations are independent. But we couldn't get past in that case the fact that the supervising authority was the NASA agency head. And we get past that in this case. And I think, I want to emphasize the footnote 4 in the NASA decision, which the court pointed out that the NASA agency head could direct the OIG in that case, or NASA OIG, to comply with EEOC regulations and statutory requirements. But it couldn't tell the NASA OIG how to conduct investigations. We think that lines up the same way here in terms of not being able to tell OPM how to conduct its investigation, but nobody can tell OPM anything in this case other than the OPM agency head, because OPM is delegated the authority to conduct the suitability act, the investigation as well as the determination, delegates only the determination and makes IRS its agent in that situation. And in terms of your pay question, Judge Kavanaugh, I just wanted to answer that. 5 U.S.C. Chapter 13, and I can't tell you the exact provision, requires agencies to compensate OPM for the investigations.
Yeah.
Interesting. Budgetary trick.
Can you address the argument you make about the danger to the employees who are either able to see classified information or are themselves security cleared?
Well, we make the point that although that issue isn't before the court, that I think there's a slippery slope that's too slippery. If the court rules against OPM and against the FLRA in this manner and says OPM is an agent of the IRS for purposes of the Weingarten rule, it would seem to suggest to us that OPM would be in the same situation with regard to the various investigations we cite at page 24 and 25 of our brief, which are these security clearance investigations as well as sensitive position investigations. Of course, they're not at issue here, but it is an important consideration. And the citation to the injury or the reason why OPM does not want a third party present, as is page 101 of the joint appendix. Thank you.
I do want to ask you one irrelevant question, and that is, these accepted employees, I had a hard time finding an example, and finally did, but I wanted to ask you about the navigators for Obamacare. Are they accepted employees?
I can't answer that. I don't know the answer.
Okay.
But as an example, I'm an accepted employee in terms of working at Department of Justice.
Well, the Schedule C and political appointees are never members of a bargaining unit, are they?
Say that one more time, because I think the answer is no, but I want to make sure.
Because they're management, the Schedule C political appointees.
Yes, that's correct. They're right. Not part of a collective bargaining unit.
Right. And you're an accepted employee by virtue of what? That's what I'd like to know the answer to.
By virtue of the statutory provisions that we cited in our brief,
right,
that it accepts us from having to take the competitive test to get into the federal workforce.
So it's not a description of your, it's not based on your title, or it's just a list of who's accepted and who isn't, or what?
And that's how I understand it. The best way to describe it is the competitive service employees have to take a test, accepted service employees don't, as a major way to slice that difference.
Well, I know that. I'm just, okay. I had a hard time finding out who is an accepted employee.
Well, I actually, I don't
I
have.
Think, I did find as an example the people who were hired after Katrina, that some of the people hired by FEMA to go down there, that I guess a temporary employment, so that's accepted. But I was just wondering.
I think the broad definition and the one I think we put in our brief is, it's so broad, it's everybody who doesn't have to take the competitive entrance to get into the federal workforce.
Okay.
And that's the best I can do. And if the court wants, I could try to provide a list and a letter.
Well, that's not before us, the accepted
okay.
employees.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thanks a lot. All right, how much time does Mr. Shaw have? Okay.
I just want to make 2 points. The employees at issue here, those in their first year of employment, they fear discipline from IRS, not OPM, when it comes to information that's disclosed in these investigatory interviews. It's IRS's role to make the suitability determination and to take any other appropriate action. These are the very employees that 7114 intends to protect. Second, as to this discussion earlier about who had the authority originally to make suitability determinations, Your Honor is correct that it began with the president, went to OPM, who has now delegated that authority to IRS. But what we want to make clear is that we don't think any one delegation is more momentous than the other, whether it's the president's to OPM or OPM's to IRS. As a practical matter, this is IRS's role. This is what it does. It's in charge of the end result of the suitability process. And last, we want to make clear that no matter which legal standard applies, we think that we should prevail. We think that this delegation of authority, which the FLRA in its decision below misapprehended, is a material error under either legal standard. That delegation changes the overall suitability process into an IRS function. And using the NASA standard, it makes clear that the OPM investigators who are conducting the interviews, as really the middle part of this entire suitability process, are doing so to facilitate IRS's ultimate conclusion, its ultimate suitability determination. So we think that no matter which standard applies, the FLRA's decision below, as it relates to those in their first year of employment, should be reversed.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.